A snap election or not? The same Sébastien Lecornu whose coalition government collapsed after 14 hours on Monday, tasked with staying on for an extra 48 to pull off the impossible, strike a deal between feuding parties that can get a budget over the line through a splintered parliament before the end of the year. Borrowing rates already climbing. But for a deal, you need compromise. To Lecornu's left, the socialists want to go back on Emmanuel Macron's hotly contested pension reform of 2023. To the right, the conservative Les Républicains say no way. We'll measure the height of the hurdles at hand and possible ways the French president can avoid another snap election that's sure to further shrink his support in parliament. All this just 19 months out from the poll that will pick his successor in 2027, the frontrunner in that race, already in campaign mode, far from Paris on the, what was to be deadline day. The far-right's Marine Le Pen instead claiming that all this haggling in the high halls of power smacks of a cabal. And while the left and the moderate right tear themselves apart, her national rally party's been quietly canvassing constituents, anticipating their next trip to the ballot box. Today in the France 24 debate, how to break France's political impasse. With us, French socialist senator Hélène Conway-Mouret. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Philippe Moreau-Chevrolet, senior partner at political consultants Iconic. Good to see you.
Good to see you, François.
Jakob Hessler, global head of consulting at Forvis Mazars. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
good. And from Rome, he advised the conservatives here in France, but that was in a previous life. Political scientist Thibaut Muzelg, author of Post-Populism in French. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
On the go, by the way, you can listen to the show. That's wherever podcasts are streamed. Yeah, Sébastien Lecornu's extra time as French Prime Minister, it's going to go beyond the 48-hour extension announced on Monday. We know because Emmanuel Macron's third PM since last year's dissolution of Parliament was scheduled for an interview in the primetime 8 p.m. news broadcast. And we've had a day of huddling, haggling, and finger-pointing, as Emerald Maxwell explains.
A note of optimism from outgoing French Prime Minister Sébastien Lecornu on the talks he'd held so far with opposition parties as he tries to find a way out of France's political crisis.
They show a shared will to ensure that France has a budget before December 31st of this year. This shared will is creating momentum and convergence, which clearly moves us away from the prospect of the dissolution of Parliament. This evening, I will go to the Élysée Palace to present to the President the solutions that are on the table, if we manage to find any.
One of the solutions potentially on the table is a suspension of the French government's hallmark pension reform. Once deemed untouchable, the left has long called for it to be repealed. But the socialists were cautious as they left their meeting with the Prime Minister.
We have no assurance that this suspension of the pension reform is actually happening. It's only been mentioned by the Education Minister Elisabeth Borne, who is also the author of this reform. But at this stage, no one can guarantee that it will be the case.
Borne, who pushed through the unpopular reform as Prime Minister 2 years ago, told a French daily on Tuesday that the government should know when to listen and to move on the matter. But for the far-right's Marine Le Pen, who wants a dissolution of Parliament and is already on the campaign trail, time's up for negotiations.
I censor everything. That's it now. Stop. The joke's gone on long enough, okay? We're making the French run around in circles, all to buy time. It's unacceptable.
Even if an agreement can be reached between the left and Macron centrists, the move risks alienating the centre-right, further imperiling budget plans.
And before we go to our panel, France 24's Antonia Kerrigan's been on stakeout duty this Wednesday, first outside the Prime Minister's office, now outside the presidential palace. Yeah, what's the mood been like for?
Well, we've seen leaders from the left-wing parties come and go today, each more confident than the last, in that there does seem to be a shift in the power dynamics. It does look like the Prime Minister is now looking for compromise with the left in a way he wasn't before. Last night, a former Prime Minister and a currently outgoing minister, said that there was a possibility that the 2023 extremely unpopular pension reform could be suspended. And this morning, the Prime Minister talked about reducing the budget deficit to 5%, having previously talked about 4.7% after his predecessor talked about 4.6%. So small moves in the direction of the left have meant they've come out very conscious that the Prime Minister may now have to compromise with them. Indeed, Marine Tondelier of the Green Party came out and said that they, at the beginning of their meeting, the Green Party representatives had talked for 10 minutes straight, and she also said that she felt they had been very convincing. What's for sure is that the centrist camp and the right won't be happy with the kinds of compromises that are being talked about here. Some leaked screenshots from the centrist bloc's MPs Telegram group chat had one MP saying compromise doesn't mean getting down on both knees, and another saying that they were burning through all of their bargaining chips far too early by talking about the pension reform at this stage. We're now, of course, waiting for the Prime Minister to emerge from the presidential palace, where he is supposed to be presenting the options to Emmanuel Macron before he goes and speaks on national TV in the 8 p.m. 8 o'clock news. Of course, the Prime Minister isn't in charge of appointing the next Prime Minister, and he's also, it's not his job to dissolve the Assembly. So we don't know exactly what he's likely to tell us tonight, but as you've said, it sounds like the deadline for a definitive resolution to this crisis may not be reached tonight, may not be met.
Many thanks for that, Anthony Carrigan, reporting live there outside the French presidential palace. You heard what Hélène Conway-Mouret, the power dynamic shifting towards the left, or will that all change in 1 hour's time?
Well, it may, and if you think that Emmanuel Macron appointed a member of LR, Monsieur Barnier, then the centre-right, Monsieur Bayrou, then his own party, Monsieur Le Cornu, the only
to be
side
Prime Minister
that he hasn't tested yet is the left. Mm. So maybe it is a strategy for him to say, they're going to come to power, I'm going to appoint one of them, and they're going to fail, because the country and the National Assembly is in such a state today that it's going to be extremely difficult for anybody who comes at the head of government to actually do anything when you know the deficit and the debt that we have, the savings that have to be made. And anybody coming into power now will have extremely little leeway to actually do anything. And if the left was indeed appointed, they would be expected to move towards social issues and societal issues and so on. And in fact, They just don't have the means to do so.
So you sound like you prefer a dissolution of parliament.
Well, as a senator, it's easier for me to say, because I know from having news from what's happening today in the National Assembly that, of course, most of the MPs there are not in favor of that, because most of them feel that they may actually lose their seats. Also, that, and that's the most difficult part, that the Rassemblement National will come back in big numbers, and therefore that Emmanuel Macron will be forced to nominate Monsieur Bardella or Madame Le Pen, indeed, because she's not campaigning. I mean, she cannot run for election. One has forgotten that. So what she's doing
there, she's appealing for the time being her conviction on corruption charges.
Maybe so, but at the moment, she cannot actually run for election if there is one. So, of course, she could be appointed to Matignon, because the president doesn't have to appoint an MP. So she's quite, you know, it's quite possible. So I don't know whether he will do that. And a lot of MPs today are not really happy with that scenario, that Monsieur Bardella or Madame Le Pen will actually end up being in as prime minister. But, you know, the situation is absolutely chaotic, because the LR party today is in disarray. Hmm. Some attempted to join the Rassemblement National to save their seats or feel that, you know, their future lies there. The center right is exploding, where past ministers or prime ministers asking for the president to resign. Then Monsieur Attal saying, you know, that he doesn't recognize the president anymore. I mean, they're actually leaving the boat. And then the left is trying to hold together, but you see the tensions there. So, I mean, that is the, you know, the political scene today, and it's quite chaotic.
Yeah, the crisis precipitating the twilight, if you will, of France's term-limited president. Two of his former prime ministers, as Hélène Conway-Mouret was stating, Édouard Philippe and Gabriel Attal, both with presidential ambitions of their own, breaking with Macron, Philippe calling for early presidential elections. Attal, the head of Macron's party in parliament, who publicly stated he doesn't understand the decisions of the man who made him. And as Antonia Kerrigan was telling us earlier, several news outlets getting hold of this group chats on the messaging app Telegram that illustrate the infighting within the presidential camp. Thibault Muzerg, if the center collapses, or is at least in disarray, is any kind of compromise possible?
Well, actually, without the center, things would be a little bit clearer because you would have one camp with a majority and the other one would be in minority. But we're not there. There is still a central camp. And if I look at the latest polls, if you put together, which is a very complicated thing, but if you put together the components of the current government, i.e. Macron's En Marche and the Républicains, you have roughly around 24, 25, 26%. And that's about what the left can get together without the unsubmissive French. So this is obviously very, very complicated. And I think that the problem here is going to stay because right now you have three blocks, more or less. The ones that are going to be united are going to be in a good position when it comes to election. And I may remind you that we have elections in 2027 at the latest, right? So this is not something that is far from us. But you have three blocks. The ones who will be united are more likely to win. And the one right now, the camp that looks the most united is the one on what we have called the far right, the populist right, the national rally, because there is just one party which is well organized and apparently ready to take power. Now, wouldn't that be the best scenario actually to, in these circumstances, to let them govern or run for elections, win an election, be under somehow some sort of surveillance by President Macron, who should definitely stay in power until 2027, at least stay in his post. That might be the best scenario that we can think of right now. But I mean, one thing is certain, that there is a central bloc, while at the same time Macronism is no longer working. So this is what the problem is right now. And by the way, we also have a national rally that still doesn't know if it's right wing or not right wing. I mean, Mrs. Le Pen, apparently, I think Mr. Bardella has a clearer idea of whether the national rally is right or not. But it seems that Marine Le Pen still hasn't made up her mind on that.
Yeah, because on social issues, she is in favor of the social safety net, appealing to working class voters who used to vote for the Communist Party. On Tuesday, left-leaning newspaper Libération headline, "The Incapables, Les Incapables," a nod to the crime-fighting TV series The Untouchables, if you will, with Macron, as you see in this picture, flanked by his prime minister on the right and the head of the conservative Les Républicains party, Bruno Retailleau, on his left. Retailleau, who triggered Monday's immediate collapse of the government. Now, from France's largest annual livestock fair in Cournon d'Auvergne in the center of France, very far from where all the haggling's going on here in the capital, Marine Le Pen this Wednesday blasting attempts to negotiate compromise in Paris.
Aujourd'hui, ce qui se déroule en fait au sein de la classe politique.
What's unfolding inside the political establishment shows the collusion that exists between the immense majority of the acting parties. And so we represent change. The French have understood this. We wish for elections because the French people are sovereign. It's up to them to decide. to find the answers to crises.
Philippe Chevrollet, Marine Le Pen there talking about collusion between all those between all those who are trying to reach some kind of compromise. Compromise, a dirty word at this point, it seems.
Every populist knows how to do it, but she's good at it. She plays a part from a livestock fair, far from Paris. You know, I'm not in that secluded place that you call the capital. I'm with the people outside of Paris, with the farmers, with the real guys. And what I'm telling you is that they are plotting, all of them, together to exclude us, the people, from the real, from the power, from government. And we should be in government because we deserve it. So it's unfair. Okay, that's what she's playing. The problem is if we put her in charge, as Thibault Mouzerg suggests, we are in the middle of a deep political crisis internationally, so we would have a government headed by a guy who most probably, if it's Jordan Bardella and or Marine Le Pen or a girl, we would be for pro-Russia, for Putin. I mean, we would have a president fighting for Ukraine because he does it well. But we would have a prime minister fighting for Russia.
But isn't it just democracy? It's the party with the most votes in parliament.
No. The first coalition. We have a coalition in the parliament, by the way. It's on the left.
It was.
It's a problem for Emmanuel Macron because it's on the left. But still, it's a coalition, right? Mm-hmm. It's a leftist coalition, if you will, but it's nonetheless existent. He doesn't want to choose or pick up a prime minister from the left's ranks. He's responsible for that choice. Nobody else is responsible but him. If he doesn't do it, then it will be the National Front. The Front National, the Rassemblement National. It will be the far right, the populist. So he has a very clear choice. Either he gives the power, the government, to the populist, and he will be fully responsible for what happens next. And it will be against him, mainly, that they will govern. And they will play the populist book as Trump does it. Every day there will be a new thing. Every day a new circus. The democracy will be torn apart and they will be elected in a landslide in 2 years. I can promise you that.
A landslide?
In a landslide. They know how to do it. We don't, as Democrats, moderate Democrats. They know how to play the book. I mean, our political parties are far too weak. They don't get what populism is. They don't get what happens in the US. They don't understand what is happening on the social media. I mean, they are really lame ducks. Sorry for that. But
Jakob Hessler, do you agree?
It's a bit too extreme for Jakob.
As a matter of principle, unpack and take an opposite stand and try to mitigate, I think, between the different points. I think the fundamental issue, and I think you mentioned it before, is we have a deficit and we have a political instability, and third, I think, and that is some of the triggers, we have 50 years of perceived decline of France when you look at GDP per capita, where it was compared to the rest of the world and where it is today. And I think the combination of that leads to this situation where compromise is a bad word, where you basically have the good and the bad news. You can choose. If you increase the deficit in order to please the voters who don't want to today pay for something because they feel it should be future generations, well, that increases borrowing costs because people don't trust in the ability of France to actually pay back its debt. If you don't do that and you continue to muddle through, you actually also increase the debt cost because what you get is what you see right now, and the fact that France has a higher pays higher debt than cost interest rate than Italy is because there's a premium because it's so badly governed. You could say it's a people who give money to France say it's such a mess, we need more money because instability is too high. So basically you can, in a way, the good news is you can really choose. The bad news is you only have bad choices.
And this idea that compromise is a dirty word, is it just in France or is it also this? Because everybody's been looking, look at the Germans. They sit down, they decide first on the platform, then they decide who's going to be in the government. They know what to do.
I think compromise is a muscle. It's not a concept. So a muscle only works when you train it. So I think it's too easy to say. And actually, sometimes when you have too much muscle, it actually also looks ugly. And I think in Germany, sometimes we have overtrained muscle so much that we actually have produced a political situation that has its own, comes with its own problem of fatigue, with so much compromise that you can't even tell who's who and what do they want. And that has led to the own Germans' populist issue, which is, and I go back to some of your earlier points, which is, if there is no clear notion of who is saying what and wants what, then at some point people will go to either fringes if there's sort of some muddling in the middle. The problem is that, and I think it was pointed out before, the Rassemblement National, it's not very clear yet what its message is. That may help it electorally, i.e. you can combine working class plus, you know, traditional conservative values, libertarian economics. That might work, but obviously, if ever that combination got elected unchallenged, you'd provide exactly the same chaos, because you'd have one part of the government that would say, we abolished a reform, we've spent more money, we give more money, you know, we produce more deficit. And the other half of the government would then say, oh, no, we need to be, you know, tight budgets, etc. And that's where, and I go to your book, I think the question is, what can we learn about how the right can go beyond this blockage, and what can we learn maybe from Italy? I don't know.
Thibaut Muzel, exactly, because in the last 48 hours, we've heard a lot of references to Germany and also a lot of references to Italy, where there's a coalition, there's a clear leader. The coalition is quite wide between the far right and the center, and that coalition seems to work.
Yes, indeed. And remember that 10 years ago, we in France were making fun of the Italians for, you know, having a government every 6 months, which, you know, now is their turn to have a laugh. And I can tell you that in Rome, there are loads of laughs, and the memes are spreading like wildfire in the WhatsApp groups on around Palazzo Chigi, but yes, I mean the problem. And let me get back just to and thank you, by the way, for the great publicity for my book. I don't need to do it, so that's wonderful. Usually I have to do it myself, but here, thank you very much for making that publicity. But I think what the thing in Italy is that what they have understood and that we haven't is that there is now a return to a debate between left and right, while the debate of the 2010s was between populists and the establishment. And I actually, even though Marine Le Pen is still very much, you know, entwined in this divide between populists and the establishment, I actually think that the future is not that, and the future is more with people like Mr. Bardella, or it could be Mr. Retailleau, by the way, who also, you know, clearly see the world as or the political fight as one between essentially between the left and the right. So here is the problem that we have. We have a system here that has been basically thought through, and a government that has been thought through by Emmanuel Macron, whose entire career over the past 7-8 years has been built on this idea that the divide is between populists and the establishment, and he represents the establishment. So you have that on one hand. On the other hand, you have Marine Le Pen, whose entire career as well has been built on the divide between the establishment and the populists. And the only way to get out of this is to move forward with what I think is a much healthier debate between left and right. And by the way, this is the very reason why right now the compromise is extremely difficult to find between the socialists and Les Républicains, because they are both looking at a pretty dead corpse that is Macronism, and they're seeing the electors that could go back to them. They just cannot agree on such thing as pension reform. I mean, cultural issues. These are things on which there is no compromise possible. And this government, if ever there is a government with a center-left majority, which would be, you know, fantastic in the short term, both for the left and maybe for the country, because the country will have a government. This will not last, because Les Républicains will not be for, and On the other hand, if you have a government that is still led by the center-right, then there will be censorship from the left. So right now, this is the problem where we're at. We are in a national assembly that does not correspond to this unity. But even though the French people have clearly shown that they're for them, during the last parliamentary election, that for them, the divide is, again, between the left and the right. And this is the key to understanding what's going on in Italy right now and why in Italy, the country, the government is stable.
Right. So return to left versus right. And since we don't know the largest party, that of Marine Le Pen, which side it's on, what we are seeing are fresh cracks in that Republican firewall, as it's known here, against the far right. The head of Les Républicains, Thibault Muzel, was talking about the party, remember, of Jacques Chirac and Nicolas Sarkozy, calling on his supporters to vote against the left, not the far right. This is in a by-election that's coming up next Sunday in southwest France.
Vous pouvez comprendre, ça peut provoquer un trouble que vous n'indiquiez pas.
J'ai indiqué la consigne qui est
donc
la mienne.
Si je comprends bien, et si je m'y connais un peu, ça veut dire que vous appelez à voter pour le bloc patriote.
En tout cas, certainement pas pour la gauche. C'est notre ligne.
That Republican firewall, it's been talked about so much over the years, ever since 1984 and 83-84 when the National Rally, then the National Front, first surfaced Senator Conway Mouret. Is it cracked or has it crumbled?
Well, there is a major crack, yes, indeed. And just talking to my colleagues from the Les Républicains party today, some of them are extremely uneasy with Mr. Retailleau's position. But as I was saying earlier, there is this temptation for some of them to feel that their political future may reside indeed on the far right of what, you know, they have been defending so far. Others were true Republicans, indeed will stay, but I think you know what...
Because Les Républicains is an interesting party. It's got the presidency of the Senate.
Yes.
But in the lower house of parliament, this is the used to be the Gaullist party. It was one of the biggest parties in France. Now it's reduced to 50 seats out of 577.
In the National Assembly, but it is the majority party in the Senate. So when we have, you know, a text going from the National Assembly to the Senate, for the past 8 years, it is Les Républicains who decided really on the last text or the amendments and so on that will come out of it. No, I see an implosion of that party taking place now. And this is very sad because, indeed, if we are to go back, and I feel it is the case, to having a right-wing vision of society and left-wing vision and, you know, having this democratic debate that is very healthy, that we can get ideas out of each other rather than having this kind of middle, you know, what Emmanuel Macron wanted, this kind of model thing that, you know, people don't recognize themselves in. We will not have a right-wing party. We're going to have the extreme right populist, and I think the comparison with Italy doesn't stand there because Madame Meloni doesn't have Monsieur Le Pen, Jean-Marie Le Pen, as a father. I mean, it's not the same history. It's not, I mean, the Le Pen family, it is the firm, you know, and we know where they come from, we know what they stand for, and even though now they're extremely good at communication, which is the case of most of the parties, and indeed they rely very heavily, and that was extremely well presented.
Thank you.
On social networks today. Yeah. They're extremely active. Look at TikTok. I mean, the last election, when I asked a young group of voters in my village who they had voted for, they said, oh, for him. And I said, do you know who he is? It was Monsieur Bardella. Mm. And they said, why did you vote for him? Because he, you know, he's extremely good and he's good looking, you know.
He talks well.
And he talks well. I mean, it may be an empty shell. Sorry for that, but it is. No, it is true.
So let me ask you, Philippe.
So it's a nice shell to look at from outside, you know?
Philippe Marchand-Vallée, Thibault Muzel's idea that you know, this idea of mainstream versus populist, what you need to do, he says the recipe he's suggesting is turn it into a debate between of left versus right. Why does that matter? Or do you agree with it, first of all?
It could be the future of it, of the political system. We could go back to that opposition between left and right, but it won't be the same left and won't be the same right. The right is trying to incorporate the populist, its populist side. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde merging in one single character. And they're trying very hard, and there will be, you know, people will politically die because of that, and they're trying to incorporate it and try to form to morph into one political form on the right side. And the left is in a dire in a predicament because they have the LFI, La France Insoumise, the far left, which is very problematic. And by the way, in the polls, the moderate left is getting to be higher than the far left, which is unprecedented in recent times. And with what the opposition between the two left is really strong. They have morphed in the past, so to speak, but they can't do it anymore because of Gaza and every other.
All right, but let me ask you, because at the heart
it's a bit long, but
at the heart of the discussion over the last 24 hours has been an idea that the hard left and the moderate left agree on, which is to go back on this pension reform that was so bitter in 2023.
And the center is willing to give it to them, this political victory. Somehow.
Is it really willing, though, or is it just Elisabeth Borne, the former PM?
At this stage, the question is...
Do we open the debate?
They opened the debate. They did it themselves. Hmm. And Elisabeth Borne, who is a close... is a very respectable politician, very calm, quiet politician. She's not the excited type, and she's very close to Emmanuel Macron. She decided to do it by herself. But, I mean, if she did it, it's because she felt that she could. It would be accepted somehow to drop the reform. And so the left could have this political gain. The left understands what a coalition is, but my fear is that I don't think that the electorate is getting what a coalition is. Really anymore. I think they don't understand what a coalition is. Why? Because it's polarized. Mm. And if you're not representing your face, F-A-Y-T-H, instantly and clearly, as Jordan Bardella does, then you appear to be, you know...
And also, if you're in government, will you be tarnished as a collaborator of Emmanuel Macron's deeply unpopular?
Yeah, sure. And you would be, you know, you're considered to be damaged goods because you're tainted if you don't really fight for what you create.
I think there's two things in there, which is interesting, is that in Italy, that reconfiguration of the left-right came through the right. Maybe in France, it will come through the left, which is if the emancipation of the socialists from LFI, which has so far for them electorally worked rather well. They have out of a party that was given for dead, they have sort of resurged with higher votes and a better perception among left-wing voters. And the fear of
their candidate got 2%, less than 2% in the presidential
election. Yeah, but why would Macron and his party give up the pension reform? Because the center they represent, there's always a center, and there are always centrists, center-left, center-right, and that's perfectly okay in that spectrum from left and right. The problem is that historically the right and the left were so weak that suddenly the center became bloated and pretended that it is actually a political movement, when in fact it is the absence of proper left and right or split of left and right that allowed that center to take this amorphous shape. Now, if you had elections, it would just deflate back to what it always was, the center-left, the center-right, it's people highly respectable who have, you know, highly civilized, but never capable of running a majority anywhere. That's what they have always been, and that's what they would get back to, and obviously, they would all be punished in elections now, and I think that's why, ultimately, the Macronists have to ask themselves the question, if we don't give this up, it'll be elections and then we'll be gone. If we give this up, well, we've got a little bit of a chance. And if they did, and you'd imagine a more left-wing prime minister tolerated by some type of center to the center right, you'd have at least for short term something stable. The problem is obviously that the Républicains have at some point a huge incentive to then join and leave, because they need to make sure that at the next election they are sort of the right wing. and which is, you know, the union of the rights is something that's been talked about. And if
the union of the rights, which was a concept under the Third Republic that included far right parties,
exactly. And it would, one of the points I think is, union of the rights means that there's two for a union. The way it looks at the moment, the far right wouldn't need a union of the right. It wouldn't need a kind of coalition of Meloni because they'd just be wiped out as well. And that's, so in a way, I think Retailleau is actually really having to manage this difficulty, which is if he is not right enough, he'll be just also wiped away as a Macroniste, even though he is not. And I think by temperament, he is not. He's originally from a far more traditional conservative background, politically, personally, religiously, and all of that.
In 2017, Emmanuel Macron blew up the two big tent parties by saying he would, promising on the campaign trail, he would take the best of the left and the best of the right, what was called in French the en même temps, at the same time. He called his party En Marche, the same initials, coincidentally or not, as his own. On Monday, when all hell was breaking loose, the same Emmanuel Macron was filmed on a soul-searching solo walk along the banks of the River Seine. Philippe Monchevrolet, your thoughts on the semiotics of that moment?
Obviously, as always with Emmanuel Macron, it's staged. I mean, it was purposefully done. And I think if you go back to our collective folklore, political folklore, it reminds me of the pictures of François Mitterrand, the former French president, socialist president, walking on what we call Le Champ de Mars. It's this, very nice place.
Yeah, he would stroll around Paris, Mitterrand.
Strolling all alone, reflecting upon what greatness and, on the follies. And it's between the two. So it's very poignant. But it's a stage.
And there's a bit of fall foliage.
Since I cannot mention François Mitterrand, I can mention General de Gaulle, who walked on an Irish beach as well, trying to find inspiration at a very difficult time for himself too. But he was not alone.
Exactly.
He was in Ireland.
General de Gaulle, who founded the Fifth Republic in reaction to a system where the political parties would play a game of musical chairs. Was somebody who, even though he had this strong central party, understood politics and coalitions. He'd worked under the Third Republic. And so my question to you is, Emmanuel Macron, you knew him when you were a minister. He was then at the presidential palace. Was he somebody who understood the game of politics as we've been discussing throughout this show, left versus right? You give me this, I'll give you that. The compromise, the sausage making of politics.
Well, it's going to be a very blunt answer, but the answer is no. Emmanuel Macron was never elected at any level in France. When you look at all the various presidents that we've mentioned, that we've seen, they were all elected as mayor for Nicolas Sarkozy, for President Chirac, the same with François Mitterrand, Valéry Giscard d'Estaing. If you look at all of them, they actually understood France. They spent days and months of their lives in political meetings, listening to people, trying to get the vibes and be interested in people. And I'm not sure that Emmanuel Macron, I'm going to be incredibly harsh, but I'm not sure that Emmanuel Macron is actually interested in people. I think he has great ideas, that he is well capable of having far-fetched theories. He's a true believer.
He was re-elected, though. I mean,
well, elected as president. Yeah. What I'm saying is that if you look at the past of all the other presidents, they knew France intimately, which Emmanuel Macron does or did not.
Because this is a moment,
the first time, simply because his professional career was never linked to politics. He was called to the Élysée to work, indeed, as Secretary General Adjoint. But that's all. But it's not just because you observe ministers, having a meeting around the table, that you actually understand politics. You do not.
And you got that sense when you met him
then. He's missing, and plus the fact that he was much younger than any of the others as well. But maybe sometimes youth can be also something which is good because you bring energy. And, I think, the French people were also maybe a bit tired having elderly presidents, and you know they wanted the change.
But right
they
now,
they also wanted the change with Nicolas Sarkozy.
But right now, right now,
his profile was quite different from the others.
Right now, in common way, this is a moment that calls for party politics. Come on, he's been in office for 8 years. Does he understand party politics now?
I do not believe so. I you know, the image of him being alone, walking alone, maybe indeed it is staged, certainly. But I think this is his position today. And there are so few people around him. And even those who are around him say openly that if he hears, he doesn't listen.
Thibaut Muzerge, is it that lonely at the top?
Yes, it seems so. I mean, Emmanuel Macron has lost all of his allies. Everybody's smelling blood, whether they want a dissolution or even an early presidential election, which would set a very precedent in my mind for the institutions of the Fifth Republic. But the reality is that today, like it or not, he is alone, and his big predicament is that, or his problem is that if ever he goes for a dissolution, which might be the only solution that is left to him in within 24 hours, if ever he goes to that, then he's going to lose his party. Because, I mean, you can already see, we're talking about the tensions within LR, but it is actually much, much worse within En Marche. So that's really a problem for him. He is completely alone now. It's the end of rain, right? We say in French, an ambiance de fin de règne, an atmosphere of end of rain. And this is exactly how it looks like, with everybody starting joking for position for the after, whatever the after may mean.
Yeah, Jakob Hessler,
like that.
For people watching this show from abroad, should they be panicked? Because this is, after all, Europe's second biggest economy, that we're headed now for 18 months of high instability heading to a 2027 presidential election? Or is there always a way and they'll figure it out?
Well, for better or worse, I'm not sure that everything is so amazing next door. So whether you look to the UK and look at the huge mess a government with a huge majority is in, you look to Germany, which is very complicated, where there was the promise of renewal and finally they get backtracked into basically doing exactly the same thing as before. Now, Italy is the haven of stability. Spain looks pretty stable for the time being, but even Spain hasn't got its budget voted for the time being. So while the economy seems to be doing not so badly, but, you know, I think we are just in really, and then look at the war in Ukraine, look at drones flying over. I think we are in a world that is today much more unstable and unpredictable than we were used to. So that's what should create everyone's anxiety. Whether then on top, France is also what France does. That makes things somewhat worse, but I think it's the overall situation which is a real challenge for European democracies.
All right. I'm not sure if that's a consolation, but I want to thank you. We'll leave it there for now. Jakob Hessler, I want to thank Hélène Conway-Mouret, Philippe Moreau-Chevrolet, Thibaut Muzerge for being with us from Rome. Just a programming note for you. On Thursday, there'll be no show. We'll be hearing from the French president, but not about politics. He'll be speaking at the ceremony for the late Justice Minister, Robert Badinter, the man who abolished the death penalty back in 1982. His remains will be buried among the greats of the Republic at the Pantheon in Paris's Latin Quarter. We'll be having live coverage of that ceremony right here on France 24.